Tom Weber on NPR News. Last Thursday was the one-year anniversary of the death of Philando Castile, shot by a police officer during a traffic stop in Falcon Heights. We had a conversation on this show that day about the kinds of changes that could be possible to laws or policies in the justice system and policing. Our guests were a state senator, a police chief, and a federal judge. At one point, State Senator Jeff Hayden made reference to a fellow lawmaker, Republican Representative Tony Cornish, for not doing enough to make some of the changes that Hayden supports. So we connected with Representative Cornish after the show, got his thoughts, which we're going to play now. But I'll start with the comment that Senator Hayden made on this show last week.
But I have to say, and I'll just call him out, people like Representative Cornish, who leads the House's, you know, Public Safety Committee, the things he says, the vitriol in which he says it, and how he says it, that doesn't make me think that we're going to get there anywhere soon, because we have people in the legislature who are supported by the larger law enforcement agencies. And I want to be careful. I'm not saying all law enforcement officers and people, just their trade organizations and unions end up supporting the kind of things that these guys, you know, are putting on the table. Now, I know, for instance, that they don't support the Castle Doctrine. They don't support some of the gun things that he does. But some of the other stuff around police, you know, the understanding of some of the reforms we have, they haven't been strong on that issue. And that's what I'm hoping to lift up.
All right, Representative Cornish, that was what Senator Hayden said on the show last week here. Just your initial thoughts to what he said and what you're working on.
Yeah, I was kind of confused or shocked, actually, because I am the author, and Senator Limmer is a co-author of a bill that puts the largest amount of money into police training. It was brought to us by all law enforcement coalition, the chiefs, the sheriffs, and the Minnesota Police Officers Association, 10,000 cops. And it gives training on implicit bias, on cultural differences, training dealing with suicidal people, mentally ill people, and crisis intervention teams. The law enforcement listened and put together this bill. And then secondly, I've never made comments supporting either Yanez or Castile. My only comments, and you could research this to the media, have been, don't rush to judgment, wait, let the system work. It's the best system in the world. And even after it, I didn't come out and make any statements or gloat over the supposed decision in favor of police. So I have been, you know, completely independent. And Jeff Hayden and I have known each other for a long time. And I was just surprised at the comments, because I don't know of any comments I've ever made like that.
Well, and you did do an op-ed after the verdict came out, I believe, right? That was in the Pioneer Press. I mean, you did talk about the case as well there.
Oh, yes. Yes, and I called it tragic, and that we were working on things and things like that. You know, I believe it was a tragic situation that the way it ended. But, you know, the 10 jurors, I said in the letter, came to a decision pretty quickly, and then the two later on, and then the judge comes out and says that it was the proper decision according to the facts. And so, you know, I guess that's all I've ever said about it. I know Valerie Castile and Clarence. They've been in my office, and they asked me to name this bill after Philando. And I said I didn't think that would be a good idea. It would probably drive a wedge between police and the community instead of healing. And so the members of law enforcement I've talked to were really shocked at naming a bill after someone, after there's been a trial and acquittal, and they're more than happy to go forward with the training and any training that people can think of. De-escalation training, we put more money into that this year also. And so we're ready and willing to look at any changes. It's just not finding fault either way.
So just to clarify, because you mentioned this bill wasn't named after Philando Castile, but I think what we're talking about is the same $12 million fund that the governor is now asking that the fund itself be named after Philando Castile. We're talking about the same pot of money, right?
Yes. Yes, this is the same fund. And surprisingly, the governor had it funded at only $4 million. I upped the funding to $13 million, my actions and Senator Limmer's. And so we even almost tripled the amount. And so I think that law enforcement has stepped out. Their lobbyists were pushing this at every step, and it was hard fought. It came right down to the very end negotiations between the House and the Senate, And we finally got it done, but mostly because of law enforcement lobbying.
So I understand there is funding now for training, including things like implicit bias. Bigger picture, because I'm not sure $12 million would necessarily fund every bit of training in every department across the state. But in general, should implicit bias training be mandatory for every officer in this state?
I believe by this bill it will. Right now, we get between $2.5 and $3 million into police training for reimbursement. It falls way short. And now we will get $13 million. And so it's a huge increase. And there's direct direction in this bill. And the post board is going to put out requests for proposals on strict criteria that has to be met. So it's a great bill that actually Clarence Castile and Valerie backed this bill and spoke well of it and offered to testify in favor of it. So I have a good relationship.
And now Clarence Castile is going to be on the post board as well. Governor Dayton is appointing him to that board.
Yes, I believe that that's within his full authority to do. He has a number of appointments that he can make as far as cops or prosecutors or members from the community. So
one of the things I hear when we have these conversations, Representative, as we talk to Representative Tony Cornish from Vernon Center, he also chairs the House Public Safety and Judiciary Committee, is that when you look at the training that exists for police right now, there is some training around things like de-escalation and the implicit bias that you're talking about there. There's also the more use of force training, the firearms training, and that there's a worry and a critique that that ratio is far too skewed on the firearm side of things. In other words, yes, you do some de-escalation. Yes, you might do some implicit bias, but it pales in comparison to the other types of training police use that, for lack of a better term, skew on the side of how to use that force. Is that a fair assessment? Is that a ratio that should change writ large for police?
No, it isn't, because the community should take a lot of interest in firearms training. I mean, to keep innocent bystanders from being hit, to make sure it's applied properly. It's not just target training. It's shoot, don't shoot, computer simulations of stops. It's actually meant to keep the community safe. And we actually... there are departments that only train once a year. The poorly funded departments in small departments where some of these things happen get trained once a year in firearms. Others, it could be four times a year, but that's the problem we're running across, is the insufficient funding. So one point I'd like to make is there are almost a million stops made on by cops in Minnesota. And something can go wrong or there can be a controversial happening, but the State Patrol made 365,000 stops in 2015 and hardly a complaint or incident. So 99% of the time, things go right and sometimes tragically go result in a shooting that's, you know, looked at for years to come.
The statistics show that of those stops, and you are right that a majority of them happen without a use of force incident, but that a majority of them happen, there's a discrepancy between who is stopped, people of color versus white drivers, especially when you compare that to Minnesota's population. So let's take this $12 million now. Let's take the funding that we're going to do on training. How will funding like that address the fact that while you're right, most of these stops do occur without use of force, most of them also occur with a discrepancy tilted against people of color? Will that ratio change because of the training money like this?
Yeah, there's been numbers of studies done on racial disparities, but it's found to be more of an economic socio disparity. In other words, if you can't afford, if you're economically depressed, you can't afford to fix the taillights, pay the insurance, pay your fines, you're naturally going to get stopped more. And in my 32 years of experience, it's more of a, can you afford to pay your fines? Can you afford to fix your car, a taillight being out, headlight being out, no insurance are reasons for stops. And unfortunately, the economically depressed people, you know, get stopped and ticketed more for those violations. And so I think you have to look across the board at, you know, all of these things. And it's a situation we'll debate for years to come. We've tried to do something about it. And there is training going on in racial disparities and constitutional stops. It's mandated. So in every policy of every peace officer, they go through training like this. So We're trying.
Yeah, let me ask about you for a moment, Representative. You're a former police chief, and you come in for this criticism that you're just nakedly pro-police, that police can do no wrong in these kinds of conversations. I know you know this image is out there, so just address that. Is that fair? Is that true?
Yeah, I believe it's an unfair accusation or description. I think that I've been very open to all points of view, and that's why I had Valerie and Clarence and Valerie's daughter come up and talk to me, and is very open about their input as to what type of training that we should take. And I've never taken the side of a cop outright. What I've said is let the system work. It's the best system in the world. If the decision comes out by 12 people, it's the best decision we can come to. And I think the judge in the case agreed that it was a proper determination. So I guess I fail to see where I'm polarizing just for wanting to be fair and not rushing to judgment.
Final question for
you. Like the guy said in your interview earlier, nobody hates a bad cop more than a good cop.
Yeah.
And so I feel the same way.
What a final question for you. What about policy? We were talking in that conversation about laws. I mean, are there... Does the state's use of force by police law have to change? We were considering whether manslaughter laws could be created to really hone in on the exact things that police should not ever do and that would constitute a crime. Are those kinds of policy changes or law changes something you would support or have a conversation about?
Well, I think the judge and the St. Cloud police officer talked in an earlier interview talked about the really being problematic. I mean, if you say that you can't use deadly force unless you're in fear of your life, I mean, what do you how do you change that? Great fear of your life, or how do you make a determination, you know, at the point what is fear of your life? I don't know how we would change that. I guess I disagree with the assumption that we're told what we can't do. By the very law, telling you what you can do basically tells if you do anything outside of that, that's what you can't do. And that's what the county attorney Choi thought, that he disobeyed the law, what you can do, and you didn't do something, he charged him. I don't know how in the world the law is meant for the protection. What if we change the justifiable taking of life the other way and made it impossible for a homeowner to defend his or her home? So that has an effect on not only police, but on somebody in defense of hearth or home, what action you can take in defending your life. There's two statutes that govern that. So I look at it very difficult to change the system.
Representative.
On the judicial system. I look at it to be a really problematic messing around with definitions of when you can and can't take life.
Representative Cornish, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for offering your insight as well. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Again, we recorded that conversation last Thursday afternoon with Representative Cornish. A few hours after that interview, a statement from five police unions blasted Governor Dayton for fueling divisions between people of color and law enforcement. Dayton met with those police groups Friday and afterwards said he regretted his earlier comments had been construed as criticism of police. He says he has the utmost respect for law enforcement in Minnesota. He also stood by his remarks last year that Castile was shot in part because he was black. That doesn't mean Minnesota police officers are racist, he told reporters. It doesn't mean everyone is involved in racial profiling. It means in this particular instance, that's what precipitated the particular encounter.